This is 89.1 WEMU. I'm David Fair, and welcome to this week's edition of Creative Impact. This is a weekly series, which in we focus on the impact of the arts and creative sector in our lives and in our community. Creative Impact guests are the driving forces that make Washtenaw County one of Michigan's strongest and most vibrant arts and creative industry hubs. Now, our content partner in this endeavor is the Arts Alliance, and the president and CEO of that organization is Deb Pollock. And welcome back. Thank you so much for being here.
Happy to be here, David. It's one of my favorite times of the week.
And exactly who are we going to be speaking with today?
Well, you know, we are in award season, and we promised our listeners that we would be highlighting the medalists for the Arts Alliance's Medals of Arts, Sciences, and Humanities.
Yeah, and that's coming up February 11th, right?
It is. And so we're very excited. You know, we have such amazing, outstanding creative people in our community. And so this week we have with us our Lifetime Achievement Award winners for this year.
And they are the duo of William Bolcom and Joan Morris. Bolcom and Morris, welcome to WEMU, and thank you so much for being here. We do appreciate it.
Thank you, Dave.
Yes, we're so excited to have you both here, Bill and Joan. It's just outstanding. To give a little bit of background, Bill is a musician, a professor, a composer of chamber and choral and orchestral works, as well as opera, musical theater, cabaret, and popular song. Joan is a chanteuse. I always wanted to say that word on the radio. Chanteuse. A mezzo-soprano who's performed on stages and cabarets all across the world. You're an actor, producer, playwright, and as of just a few weeks ago, a published author now.
And all right.
You both have been on the faculty at the University of Michigan for a long time, and together you're known as the duo Bolcom and Morris.
And that's because the one thing you left off of Bill's resume was pianist.
Well, right.
He was a child prodigy as a kid, you know.
And that's what we kind of want to start out with, right, David?
Exactly right. Bill, why don't you give us a little run. What exactly was it that drew you to music?
You know, I can't remember when I was not going to be a musician. I always was always going to be a composer, even before I wanted to be a pianist. And that's true. When I was 5 and 6 years old, we had an old upright piano, which I guess would have been inherited. I didn't realize till some time when I was older that it was tuned a half tone flat, which means that actually I grew up with Baroque pitch.
Was that a broke pitch or a Baroque pitch?
Kind of both.
Now, do you have an ear that has perfect pitch?
Well, as I say, I had perfect pitch a half tone flat for years, but when I get old, after the age of 60, my perfect pitch sort of dropped away, and frankly, it was a pain to have it.
I hear that from everybody, because music can just drive you nuts if it's not exactly right.
Well, you know, radio stations will speed up recording just to be able to make it sound better.
Not this one.
Well, that of course is the days of LPs where you could actually do that.
Right.
But not now. It's all digital and probably harder to do. But I mean, no, I was a kind of a child prodigy. But thankfully, my parents did not exploit me. They were actually asked to. People came up. We were living in Seattle, and as my mom said, they got me out of the sandbox, and they wanted to see if I would go on tour. And my mom asked very nicely. She had a teaching degree as a young woman. And she said, well, what will his life be like? Will he have a chance to play with other children? And they said, no, he'll be on tour and he'll be taught by tutors. And they talked for 1 second. They said, I wouldn't do that to my dog, said my mom. And so they said, no, thank you very much. And I'm so thankful they did, because I know people were exploited at that age. And it's almost like a wound that will not go away. Very few people survive it emotionally when they've been exploited as kids.
You mentioned that you knew you wanted to be a composer even before you started playing piano. When did you compose your first piece?
Well, I scratched a lot of little things when I was little, and I suppose my first real pieces came when I was about 9 or 10 or 11. Actually, at the age of 11, my first string quartet, I've done 12. One was done a couple of years ago at 2017.
I feel like I was much too lazy in my childhood.
Yeah, really. And how about you, Joan? What are we going to learn about your early days in your new book, Let Me Sing and I'm Happy, the memoir and handbook of a singing actress?
Right. Well, I did always have a love for movies and theater. We had music in our house. We had a piano and an electric organ. My dad's mom had been a theater organist back in North Dakota. She played over the radio station. And another claim to fame, she had a dance band. and in her band was Lawrence Welk. And she's supposed to have said to him, Lawrence, you're too good for North Dakota. So I told Bill that story. He says, well, she was wrong. But anyway, so I was always surrounded with sheet music and, you know, pictures of people like Ruth Etting. I didn't know who they were, but I knew old songs from when I was a little kid. And I was very, very shy as a girl. And so I didn't see myself as a performer. I used to draw a lot when I was a girl. Oh. Then when I got out of high school, I got my first job. I decided to spend a little money on myself. I would give my paycheck to my mom. But I decided, since people had always told me they'd catch me singing, I couldn't help myself. I was singing all the time. I thought, I'll take singing lessons. So I went to the teacher who taught at my high school. She said, if I'd known you had that voice, you know. But I remember the first time I tried to audition in high school, the pianist played the intro. I couldn't make a sound. She played it again, and she played it a third time. The nun said, that's all right, dear. I just couldn't.
You were so nervous?
So I think that's why I still got nerves, even to the last couple gigs we did in New York in November. I got nerves, you know, and I'm 75. I shouldn't say that. Oscar Wilde said, a woman who will tell her age will tell anything.
I don't necessarily
that's
agree. There's a long and storied history for each of you individually. How did the duo of Bolcom and Morris come together?
I was sitting on my little fifth floor walk up in Greenwich Village in March 1972. We think it's the 6th. And an old college friend of mine and I were going to go out and eat Chinese someplace. And then the buzzer rang. And it turns out a girl I'd known slightly from parties. She said, I have a girl I'd like to meet. Here is her friend Francie, who turns out to be pregnant with twins, which would be
that
born that May.
Job.
That was not me. Francie, I had met her on a tour, a non-union tour, of a show called The Impossible Years. I played three parts. If it's non-union, you can do that. And Francie and I became friends. And when we got back to New York, she was a Jewish girl. She met and married this artist. And her husband said when she became pregnant with her first child, she became an amateur shotkin, a matchmaker. She introduced six different couples. Three of them ended up getting married.
So you were introduced romantically. Professionally.
No.
I had no idea.
No. She didn't know. Well, she knew Bill was a pianist. She knew him from parties, but she didn't know him that much. And for some reason, she thought I would like him, you know. And so she took me up there, and we just started talking. It was the same week I was starting what ended up being a 10-week gig at Peacock Alley at the Waldorf Astoria. Jay and I had an act. We had sung
Jay was a harpist.
Jay was a harpist. The Whitlow Singers had a bass player and a harpist. They were a duo piano team, Arthur Whittemore and Jack Lowe. And then when they retired from their performing career, they founded this group called the Whitlow Singers.
I was on that
2 years.
So now here we are, 25 albums and thousands or hundreds of miles and hundreds of concerts later.
Well, you know, we just had this wonderful love affair, and we didn't want to ruin it by working.
Right.
So what finally happened was, well, we began to sort of think we really should showcase you.
Yeah.
And so it turned out I was called by a rather important musicologist, probably one of the founders of the American musicological scene. His name was H. Wiley Hitchcock. He was here for many years, and then actually was at Hunter College, I think, at that time. And said, we're thinking of asking this one group to come and do some of the songs of, you know, great American 1920s and 30s show tunes. And he suggested the group. He says, yeah, but what about Joan Morris, I said. He said, who's that? Well, we'll audition. So we auditioned. Mm-hmm. And, well, some of them had to be songs that should be done by men.
By men. So my teacher at the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, Clifford Jackson, he's the one who found my voice teacher for me, too. She was in her early 80s when I started working with her. This'll knock you out, Deb. She had played as a child prodigy in Vienna for Brahms.
Wow.
So the stuff, the way she taught me about style, I'd be doing a Mozart aria. She'd say, no, it's not Puccini. You know, it had to be clean.
You are listening to Creative Impact on 89.1 WEMU. I'm David Fair with my co-host Deb Pollack, and our guests today are William Bolcom and Joan Morris, recipients of the Art Alliance's Medal for Arts, Sciences, and Humanities for Lifetime Achievement 2019.
So your dual career certainly continued all that time, but your independent careers too. Bill, you continue to be a composer.
Oh, sure.
And in fact, won multiple Grammys, a Pulitzer Prize, and you're a National Medal of the Arts winner, which I don't know if our listeners know this,
this
David.
This is quite impressive.
It is. It is the nation's highest award given to an artist. And I'm impressed that I actually go to the grocery store and bump into National Medal of the Arts winners. So I'm in awe.
Well, nobody gives us a discount.
Yeah, but, you know, these accolades and rewards are well-deserved, and there are others on the list, and Joan, too. If anything, what do they mean to you, and does it influence your work, or does it help your careers moving forward?
Funnily enough, when I got my Pulitzer, it didn't make a big difference because I was already somewhat entrained in the whole business, but it was nice to have those things, and, you know, one can't really be, you know, you can't disregard them because somebody thought well enough of you to make the award. As far as making a difference in the career, I think the one way that I became known as a composer was to work directly with the best performers I could, and they are often the ones who commission things, and it really is collaboration. And so that's where it comes down, and I think that's the part that's most exciting. And I love collaborating. I love collaborating with Joan on stage, and I love writing for her. And I've done a number of cabaret songs for her with my longtime associate, now gone, Arnold Weinstein. They have been done worldwide by singers all over the world. People have flown to us from Singapore and from Norway, from wherever, to do clinics on,
coach, yeah.
to be coached on these songs. So we've had a certain kind of very interesting career.
Most certainly. And one of the things that is so fascinating to watch, Joan, is the amount of energy and humor that you put into your performances. It is really kind of taking on a character. How much of that is you, and how much is dictated by the song?
Well, that's an interesting way to look at it. The words do tell you. My theory has always been that songs pick me. There's some songs I've looked at them and they say, no, dear, you don't have to try. Honestly, it's only something that I think I can say. Every song is a story. And since I had all the acting training I did, every song becomes like a little play. You find the character. It has to be you. It is in you. But you take that angle of yourself and you put that forward in the song. Like doing 10 Cents a Dance. I was a hat check girl in New York for a while. And, you know, just a feeling you know, waiting for the 50 cents or whatever they're going to give you, the way you feel. And you got to keep your pride. And all this, so I could think about that when I was. That was the one song we learned. We knew for about a year. I told Bill about my grandma, her old sheet music, and I said I loved Ruth Etting. So he said, "Well, let's learn 10 Cents a Dance," because we'd go to parties.
That was her signature song.
Yeah, people would say, "Oh, your girlfriend sings. Well, do something for us." So we'd do 10 Cents a Dance.
And then eventually, you know, Wiley asked us if we do this program, and that was our first program, which we did in 1973. But then somebody was there, and they hired us. We went to the Smithsonian, then we went to Hollins College.
We got a great review from Mohawk Trail. We took it to Hurok. Saul Hurok took us on. That I could have been managed by Saul Hurok. That was such a thrill for me. Last year and a half they were in business.
So we're looking back at a lifetime, a remarkable lifetime. And it sounds like it all worked out extremely well. But there had to have been ups and downs to it.
Well, I can't think too many downs.
Oh, that's so great.
I wish there were more downs weight-wise, but never mind.
Oh, yes.
Well, then that's pretty remarkable, and we're excited to be able to share with our community the careers, the wonderful things that you all have done. So we're looking forward to celebrating you at the party on February 11th. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Deb.
Our pleasure.
That, of course, is Bill Bolcom and Joan Morris, the duo of Bolcom and Morris. And we thank you very much for being our guests on Creative Impact. For Deb Pollock, I'm David Fair, and we thank you for joining us as you do each Tuesday for Creative Impact. If you would like to listen to this interview or visit the archive for Creative Impact, it's all available to you at wemu.org. This is 89.1 WEMU FM and WEMU HD1 Ypsilanti.